Hello, this is Irene Bullard. I'll be reading the Bloomington Normal Pantograph, dated Tuesday, September the 19th. Let's begin on the front page. B and Schools, in-house lawyers, rare downstate. Unit 5, District 87, each have one attorney. Tap experts as needed. While several large Illinois school districts employ in-house attorneys, McLean County Unit 5 and Bloomington District 87 are two of the few downstate districts with internal legal expertise. Kurt Richardson is the district attorney at Unit 5, and David Wood is in the in-house attorney and chief financial and legal office for District 87. Richardson compared in-house legal counsel to the role of a general practitioner. We have to have knowledge of school code and other laws that apply to school districts and be experts in that. We review contracts on a daily basis with various entities and deal with issues in school code, employment, labor, special education, property, finance, and family law, said Richardson, who has been district attorney since 2011. Wood said administrators are able to turn to a district attorney for help understanding new laws or federal regulations. If I weren't there, they would essentially figure it out on their own, but it would likely take them longer. They may not come to the exact conclusion and need to talk to outside counsel to get where they could in a brief conversation with me, said Wood, who has been District 87's attorney since 2004. Neither district has a legal department, but refer to the school attorneys for frequent guidance. Richardson's annual salary is $135,252, and Wood makes $157,168. The districts hire outside law firms for specialized expertise, and the payments to outside counsel come from the district's tort funds. At Unit 5, annual outside legal fee payments were $212,416 in 2013, $185,561 in 2014, $100,216 in 2015, and $73,817 in 2016. Unit 5 hires Miller, Hall, and Triggs for general counsel and labor negotiations. The firm charges up to $225 an hour. Other firms cover insurance, defense, workers' compensation, special education, due process cases, property tax appeals, and recalculation of state aid claims. Part of my role is to coordinate all of that and determine what can be handled in-house and what should be taken outside. We determine that based on my workload and whether or not something will involve a lot of time or specialized practice, said Richardson. Then there's the rare situation that will involve years of litigation, such as the John White lawsuit, he added. The John White case between Unit 5 and Urbana School Districts began in 2007 and stretched for nearly 10 years, with the final pending lawsuit ending in 2016. White is serving 60 years in federal prison for molesting elementary school students in Normal and Urbana from 2004 to 2006. He was forced to resign as elementary teacher at Unit 5 in 2005 after a parent complained about his behavior and adult pornography was found on his school computer. He was then hired in Urbana, where he was later arrested for molestation charges at that school, and similar accusations surfaced in Normal after his arrest. Unit 5 paid more than $1 million overall to resolve lawsuits related to White, and Urbana's claims topped $2.6 million. That case is like a full-time job in and of itself, between filing pleadings, motions, and court hearings. The job of in-house counsel is to do as much possible on the front end and to prevent a scenario like that from happening again, said Richardson. District 87 paid outside counsel $116,000 $758 in 2013, $67,808 in 2014, $112,021 in 2015, and $56,730 in 2016. Wood said spikes in outside payment occur when employee contracts are renewed or if claims for teacher dismissals or accidents increase. You never know when you're going to get a claim, but you know when it's time for teacher contract negotiation, and you can look into the future and sense when we'll have a big policy rewrite or development of documents. You can plan financially for those things, said Wood. District 87 works primarily with Seyfarth Shaw Law Firm, which handles litigation and teacher dismissal at about $385 an hour. Other firms deal with property tax-related issues, labor relations, contract negotiations, and insurance claims. Both Richardson and Wood are part of the Illinois Council of School Attorneys through the Illinois Association of School Boards, which meets twice a year for professional development and conversation about the current legal environment at schools. That group has been very beneficial, said Richardson. Not only do you have other attorneys to bounce ideas off of, but it gives us a forum to talk about current issues. Schools in Peoria and Champaign are the only other central Illinois districts that employ in-house legal help. Wood said there is a growing trend of large school districts hiring permanent attorneys, but said it isn't necessarily always to save money in legal expenses. Having in-house counsel in school districts is more about quality and effectiveness of legal analysis, said Wood. There is no end of legal issues out there that school districts are dealing with. We have to constantly be on top of that to protect our students, faculty, and taxpayers. Sewer fee hike timing debated. Options call for 44% over 1 year or 65% spread over 5 years. While a majority of the Bloomington City Council agrees that sewer rates should be increased sooner than later, there does not seem to be a consensus about when to vote to ensure the hikes at least start to take effect next year. I think our city council understands the importance of the public health issue that we're dealing with, said Bloomington Public Works Director Jim Karch after a council work session Monday. He had presented, based on a request the council made last week, a proposal to more aggressively implement sewer rate increases over a shorter time frame. The scenario for an immediate increase calls for an increase of about 44% as of May 1, 2018, and 3% annual increases after that. A 5-year phase-in plan would see annual increases of about 10.6% per year for a total increase of 65.3% between now and when the final increase takes effect on May 1, 2022. The subsequent increases would be 3% a year. Fee increases are being proposed as a way to pay for $136 million in potential spending over 20 years that was identified in the 2014 Stormwater and Sanitary Sewer Master Plans. The problem we're having with our sanitary sewers and our storm waters flooding is all across the city and not contained in one ward, Karch said. Now the question is how we address the need. Is it something we should immediately be more aggressive about, or do we do smaller improvements year over year? In the immediate increase scenario, a typical household's monthly sanitary bill, including consumption and fixed rates, would increase 50%, from $9.50 to $14.25. The average monthly residential bill for storm sewer service would have increased 30%, from $4.35 to $5.66. Cumulatively, those rates would increase from $13.85 to $19.91 at monthly charges, a 43.75% hike. Last week, Karch laid out rate increases over 5 years. Under that scenario, the typical household would see 11.6% annual increases in sanitary sewer rates, including consumption and fixed fees, and 8.2% annual hikes in stormwater fixed fees over a 5-year period ending in fiscal 2023. Under the 5-year phase-in approach, the typical household sanitary sewer bill would climb from $9.50 to $16.45, and storm sewer bill from $4.35 to $6.45 by fiscal 2023. Cumulatively, the increase would be from $13.85 to $22.90 monthly, a 65.3% increase at the end of 5 years. Alderman Jamie Mathey of Ward 1 and Mboka Mwilambwe of Ward 3 said that they want both options brought to the council to vote on next Monday. Alderman Karen Schmidt of Ward 6 and Scott Black of Ward 7 said that they favor the more immediate phase-in of the rate increases, but want to delay the voting until later this year or in early January so that the matter can be addressed as part of the city's fiscal 2019 budgeting process. I don't deny the urgency and the priority for the rate increases, but we need to have that bigger conversation, said Schmidt, who served as mayor pro tem in Mayor Terry Renner's continued absence. I certainly have watched us increase fees without making those hard decisions on the other side of where might we cut. We can't continue to ask for money in terms of fees and increases in sales taxes and property taxes without doing some serious lifting on our own end. Ward 2 Alderman David Sage said that he did not want to vote on any increases next week and agreed with Schmidt that there needs to be some offsetting reductions elsewhere. Alderman Amelia Baragas of Ward 4, Joni Painter of Ward 5, Diana Howman of Ward 8, and Kim Bray of Ward 9 want to vote next week and favor accelerating the phase-in of the increases. This decision will not be made any easier by delaying it, said Baragas. To me, the need is so apparent. We need to address it as soon as possible. City Manager David Hales was not able to attend the council's work session because he suffered a minor injury, said Schmidt. ISU looks at assault, porn cases tied to social media. Illinois State University police are investigating alleged sexual assault and revenge porn cases where, in both instances, the people met on the social search app Tinder and communicated via Snapchat, an image messaging, and multimedia mobile app. Although the two incidents are unrelated, both encounters started with Tinder, said ISU Police Chief Aaron Woodruff, who has issued a campus-wide crime advisory to address the issue. While they're unrelated, the pattern of using Tinder is a safety concern, he told the Pantograph. The Tinder app facilitates communication between mutually interested users. Woodruff said on September 7th, a student reported to ISU police that a man she met on Tinder and communicated with via Snapchat attempted to extort her by threatening to share nude images of herself that she sent to him. A week later, ISU police were notified of the alleged sexual assault that occurred early in the morning of September 13th in the 300 block of North School Street. The male student allegedly met the victim on Tinder and communicated with her via Snapchat, said police. Woodruff said when Tinder was created, to some people, it was known as what I guess you would call a hookup app. It's tried to change its image to a dating app. Both incidents remain under investigation. There have been no arrests in either case, but Woodruff said that his office is working with the McLean County State's Attorney's Office on both cases. He said Monday that the crime advisory is meant to serve as a reminder to students to be careful when using social media. The problem seems to be, if some interpret the meeting differently, he said, noting that the issue of consent comes into play. "Make sure you have clear consent," he said. "Sexual assault is a significant concern at college campuses across the country," Woodruff said. The advisory included information and resources for students to help identify potential dangerous situations. Nationwide, it is estimated that 20% of women and 6% of men experience sexual assault or attempted sexual assault during their time in college. In a study published by the Department of Justice, 82% of the victims were raped by someone they knew, and 18% were raped by a stranger. State Watch. AG has no plans for other office. Attorney General Lisa Madigan says she has no immediate plans to run for another office when her term is up in 2019, including mayor of Chicago. The Chicago Democrat made the surprising announcement last week that she wouldn't be seeking a fifth term for Attorney General after she had previously said that she would seek re-election next year. Madigan tells Chicago's WBBM that she doesn't know what the future holds politically and doesn't plan to immediately seek public office. The comments come as the 2018 race for Illinois governor is already underway. Several Democrats are making a bid for the chance to unseat Republican Governor Bruce Rauner. She also says that she has learned to never say never and is looking forward to new challenges. Madigan first took office in 2003. Road closures. North Lee Street between Locust and Market Streets will be closed beginning at 7 a.m. this morning for sewer rehabilitation work, and the drivers must use other routes. Fell Avenue between Florence and Archie Avenues will be closed to through traffic beginning at 7 a.m. today for water main repair. Today in history. Today is Tuesday, September 19th, the 262nd day of 2017. There are 103 days left in the year. Today's highlight. On September 19th, 1777, the First Battle of Saratoga was fought during the Revolutionary War. Although British forces succeeded in driving out the American troops, the Americans prevailed in a second battle the following month. On this date in 1796, President George Washington's farewell address was published. In it, America's first chief executive advised, "Observe good faith and justice toward all nations. Cultivate peace and harmony with all." Thought for today. If you are losing your leisure, look out, you may be losing your soul. Written by Logan Pearsall Smith, Anglo-American author, 1865 to 1946. And today's flick fact. True or false? More motorists in Illinois are involved in fatal traffic accidents on wet, slippery, overcast days than clear, sunny, dry days. And the answer is that's false. According to state highway statistics, by almost a 2-to-1 margin, in fact, officials theorize that we drive safer with more caution on treacherous travel days. While there may be more accidents on wet, slippery, overcast days, there are fewer fatalities. Normal offers buyouts. Council okays deal for 18 employees. Town faces $1.2 million deficit. The clock is ticking for 18 Town of Normal employees. Eligible Normal workers have until mid-October to decide if they'll take an early retirement incentive intended to help the town fight a budget shortfall after the Normal City Council approved the program Monday. Eligible employees are in pay grades 30 to 40, the lowest at the town, including receptionists, custodians, educators, and librarians who make less than $57,000 annually, have 15 years of service as of December 31st, 2018, are at least 55 years old on that date, and are eligible to receive a state pension. Members of the town's police and fire unions are not eligible. The incentive includes a year of single health insurance or 6 months for a couple, as well as a lump sum payment of $500 per year of service, up to $12,500 if the employee retires by March 31st, or $250 per year, up to $6,250 if the employee retires by December 31, 2018. The council did not discuss the program before voting on it, despite questions about it from two members of the public who commented Monday night. "I do not want to see any employees early retired or terminated in any way," said Ron Ulmer, a normal resident and frequent critic of town spending. "Will this early retirement increase the town's future pension liability?" City Manager Mark Peterson said, after the meeting, "The program will not affect the town's pension costs." Ulmer and Mark Tiratilli also questioned the council's executive session for property acquisition on Monday's agenda. Both said the town should stop considering paying to use the Fairview building, which the county owns and might demolish, and buying property for the future Uptown South District in light of the budget's shortfall. Peterson said that he can't comment on the subject of an executive session, but the town is unlikely to pursue the Fairview building, which is a now vacant property next to McLean County Nursing Home, or to buy property for the expansion of Uptown redevelopment south of the railroad tracks before April 1st, even though the town has budgeted money for it. No decision has been made on either project. Town officials hope 10 employees will take the incentive, freeing their positions for lower-paid employees or elimination. Normal faces a budget deficit of more than $1.2 million for its next fiscal year, which starts April the 1st. In other business, the council approved eliminating a railroad crossing on Maple Hill Road. Peterson said the road is already closed there, so traffic will not be affected. The Illinois Commerce Commission and Norfolk Southern Railroad will pay the town a combined $35,000 for vacating the crossing, and the town will spend $10,000 on the project. Appointing Dave Shields to Normal Planning Commission to succeed Arlene Hosea, who resigned after she was elected to the Normal Township Board. Shields has served as campaign manager for Mayor Chris Coos, who chooses Planning Commission candidates for the council to appoint. HCC legal fees cover bonds and litigation. Heartland Community College has spent about $716,420 on outside legal fees in the past 4 years. Nearly 40% of those legal expenses were in 2016, a year in which the college had several bond issues, was involved in a major lawsuit, and dealt with collective bargaining and staff restructuring. By comparison, Illinois Central Community College in nearby East Peoria spent a total of $281,849 on outside legal fees in 2013 through 2016. Heartland President Rob Widmer and Doug Minter, Vice President for Business Services, explained that part of the reason for the difference is that Heartland is still a relatively young college that has issued bonds for construction and other work as its campus has grown. It also continues to develop and revise board policies. "There are policies that existed early on, and it's a different environment now," said Widmer. "We want to make sure that we are on solid legal ground." Heartland does not have an attorney on its staff, and it's not alone in that approach. ICC, Illinois Valley, and Parkland Community Colleges all use only outside legal counsel. "From time to time, we've had the conversation about inside counsel, but hiring staff in other areas had a higher priority," said Widmer. "Even if the college had an attorney on staff to handle general questions," Widmer said, "most typically, if you have a matter of litigation, you're going to engage an outside firm. That's often true of other matters involving specialties, such as immigration and labor relations," he said. A lawsuit involving the construction of the Fitness and Recreation Center is currently on appeal, after a ruling earlier this year that was largely in favor of Heartland. The Springfield-based law firm of Brown, Hay, and Stevens serves as the college's general legal counsel and also handles litigation. It was paid $109,189 in 2013, $197,493 in 2014, $123,800 in 2015, and $285,905 in 2016. Chicago-based Chapman and Cutler, a law firm specializing in finance, was paid a total of $169,750 for bond filings in 2013 through 2016. More than half of that, $99,500, was paid in 2016. That's when the college instituted a debt management plan for long-term cost savings. We did 3 or 4 bond issues in the last year and a half, said Minter. We have to make sure the funds fit within the rules of general revenue bonds and stay within the parameters of what's allowed. The district also paid a total of $17,913 to the Dunn Law Firm of Bloomington in the 4-year period to handle employee immigration filings. The general legal questions and reviews to which the college turns to Brown, Hay, and Stevens cover a broad range of issues, from reviewing contracts and leases to interpreting Freedom of Information Act requirements and drafting board policies. Candy, Miller Park Zoo's last sun bear, dies at 33. The Miller Park Zoo has lost an old friend. Candy, at 33, the oldest Malayan sun bear in North America, has been euthanized, the zoo announced Monday afternoon. The bear was born February 14, 1984, Valentine's Day, at the zoo, Miami, and her birthday was celebrated on that day every year that she lived at Miller Park Zoo. She will be missed by many, many people in the community, zoo director Jay Tetzloff said in a statement. She was here for almost 20 years, so many guests knew her. Recently, Candy was evaluated by animal care staff and a veterinarian from the University of Illinois for lethargy, said the zoo. Upon complete physical examination, it was determined that her condition was grave, and the decision for humane euthanasia was made. Samples taken immediately prior to the bear's death and initial findings indicate a preliminary diagnosis of renal failure. A full necropsy is being performed by the U of I. Results will not be known for several weeks. I'm really sad to hear of her passing, said Ward 6 Alderman Karen Schmidt, who has been serving as mayor pro tem since August 28th. During Mayor Terry Renner's temporary leave of absence for medical-related reasons. She had a big and beautiful personality and was an important part of our zoo, said Schmidt. Tetzloff said Candy's passing was hard on the zoo's staff. Last Thursday was a sad day, he said. We dealt with it the best we can. Candy and her mate, Chapin, arrived at the Miller Park Zoo in 1998, and like many other sun bears, they did not have any offspring, said the zoo. The male bear died in 2010 from bone cancer at the age of nearly 27 years. According to the Association of Zoos and Aquariums, the median life expectancy for a female Malayan sun bear is 23.1 years. Candy was Miller Park Zoo's sole remaining sun bear, said Tetzloff. The zoo does not plan to replace her with another sun bear because there are very few sun bears left, he added. Candy was housed in the Cathofer Animal Building, and she was pretty big for the building, so we're probably going to change species after we lost her, said Tetzloff. There is a photograph on this page, Sign of Things to Come. A car drives north on Monday by the soon-to-be-open Giordano's, 1505 North Veterans Parkway, Bloomington. Construction continues in advance of its October opening, and signage went up on the building earlier this month. It's expected to employ about 50, seat about 70, and offer the standard menu of a full-service Giordano's, which includes stuffed pizza, sandwiches, soup, salads, appetizers, and desserts. It has also received a liquor license to serve wine and beer. We'll take a short break. Please stay tuned.